waiting for
Todd on the phone.
Actually, there were two other clerks that they had to go home. We had the county clerk from Kauai coming in, who came in and had to be. Where are they going?
I went back to the airport.
John Cusimano.
Okay. I guess he had to go home, and county clerk from Big Island, Alfred, he also had to go home. Maybe we can introduce ourselves.
I'm Jenny Wong, City Clerk from the county.
I'm Aisha Wong. I'm the Education Specialist at Office of Election.
I'm Darrell Yamamoto, the County Clerk from Maui.
Yeah, I'm Glenn Takashi. I'm the Election Administrator for City and County.
And Dwayne Yoshina, Chief Election Officer for State of Hawaii. We have two other guys that they're from ESNA.
Trish Shapiro is a reporter for us, and Lee Catterall is an editorial writer. I'm John Flanagan, the editor and publisher. This is Carl Zimmerman, who is an editorial writer, and Catherine Bender,
photographer.
And Blaine, our webmaster, is my own editorial publisher.
This is
thank you.
Todd Mullen.
Hi, I'm Todd Mullen. I'm from ESNS, and I'll be the project manager that heads up the team that does everything, that installs the equipment this election. And Bill Broberg's with me. He just went out to check on something. He'll be in a moment.
Cool.
And I'm from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah.
And this is Bill and the goatee, and the gentleman with him is Jim Borsma with Star Siegel. He is we retained Star Siegel to help us with public relations here in the state of Hawaii, and all requests for anything you need, go through Jim. We'd be more than happy to help you with. If there's anything that you need for as far as election night reporting information, coordinating what kind of files we give you, when we give them to you, when you need them on election night, just talk to us, and we'll be more than happy to help you go through all that. So just point us in the direction of the person that's going to be doing that stuff on election night, and probably bring his technical support with him.
So I'd just like to thank you for meeting with us. We came in at the start of the election season so that we could share with you some information that we have in our press packet. Basically, what's in the press packet are fact sheets that cover elections information that is generally asked of us during any election period. We put it together so that you guys might have ready access to that information. Sort of a preventive measure on our side, because we figure that if you read that stuff, you're not going to call us. But if you want to call us, we'd be more than happy to respond to any of your inquiries. We wanted to come to you today and sort of share with you what's in the press packet, and then talk about some stuff, the administration of elections, so that we can at least start moving forward towards the September and November election. So we'd like to start by talking about the administration of election. As I said, we had two other clerks that had to go home today. We met this morning with the editorial staff of the Advertiser, and we just got through with that meeting. We're glad that you guys could meet with us at 1:30. I think the most recent thing that has happened, and perhaps it's a good place to start, it has to do with the our list maintenance process. It has to do more directly with voter registration. As you guys probably know, voter registration is something that's handled by the county clerks in each of the counties, and They also handle absentee voting and as it relates to the provision of election services on the neighbor island in the neighbor island counties, we have the county clerks help us with the operation of precincts. So whenever a voter goes in for services on election day, the county clerks have a hand in providing that service out in the neighbor islands. In Honolulu, because the Office of Elections is here, our office is responsible for recruitment and training of precinct officials, and we also are statewide managers of all counting centers in the state. So the state handles all the counting centers. We have the primary responsibility for precincts, but on the neighbor islands, because the clerks are closer to their communities, we ask for their help and they help us. And then again, the county clerks are responsible for voter registration and they are responsible for absentee voting. Very recently, all registered voters in the state have received this voter notification card. If any of the information on this card is incorrect, the voters should correct the information and send it back to the county clerk where they reside. And in order to be registered to vote, you must be a U.S. citizen, resident of the state of Hawaii, and at least 18 years of age. I think there have been some questions as it relates to the way we do our list maintenance, so maybe I'll ask Glenn if you can go over that.
Yes, as Dwayne mentioned, this yellow card is part of an election mailing that's required by federal law, and that's why we do it. It helps us keep track of voters where they are, determine whether they're still living there or not. This particular yellow voter notification card is sent out by non-forwardable mail. So what happens is if the voter happened to have moved, the card gets kicked back to us, and that's how we know that the person has probably moved and should re-register. But you know, again, that's just one part of the listing maintenance procedure. After that, we generally send another letter to that same voter via forwardable mail to try to track them down and hopefully get them to tell us where they are so we can put them in a proper polling place. But that's the, you know, the pre-election list maintenance that we go through. We're also going to be doing another mailing of this card after the close of the voter registration deadline in August and again in October. Keep people informed in case they have moved and have responded and told us that they've moved. We gotta tell them where their new polling place is. So we do that each election year.
How are the numbers been running in registration in recent years? Are we gaining in registered voters or losing?
I think it's a gradual upslope. We're up at about 50,000 registered voters right about now. It's going to spike again in the next month, the 2 months, when more interest starts hitting. But we're up at about 550,000 right now.
You mean for this year, the current year?
Yeah,
month. What about the last election? How many?
Last election, you know, off the top of it, I don't.
Yeah, 700 and some odd thousand.
Yeah. But
I don't know the exact number, but it was about 700 and some odd thousand.
That's just a little high. It's a bit high, I think. But yeah. But we can get you that from the last election.
Trying to increase? Do you feel that the number of registered voters very low? Are we trying to campaign to increase the registration?
I think what has happened over the past few years is that By legislative policy and by us at our implementation and by congressional policy too, we try to make election services a bit more accessible and convenient. In spite of our removing all of the impediments and obstacles, you know, the registration rates have not really jumped appreciably. We have an added kind of maybe problem that arises in the state of Hawaii because we have so many non-resident military people here and we have aliens here that our voting age population is apparently very big, but our registration rates don't quite measure up to that. I think we've looked at those figures, and I think right now we think that we have around 800 some odd thousand people who are eligible to vote in the state, and we've registered about, by latest count, about 500 some odd of that. I think that's, you know, we'd like to see a lot more registrations, but on the other hand, you know, we've made the service available, it's more convenient and accessible, we've removed as many of the administrative impediments and obstacles as possible, and we haven't really seen the participate or the registration rates jump that much. I'm hopeful that maybe the campaigns and the political candidates kind of draw people into the process as well. Do you have any other questions in this area?
Okay. So you're expecting 150,000 people roughly to register in the next couple of years?
I don't know off the top of my head how many.
You gave us two numbers. You gave us 700,000 for last election and 550,000 now.
No, I don't think the 700,000 was correct for the last election, but right now...
600.
Yeah, right now...
Excuse me, 600 and some odd.
Yeah, we, you know, there are a bunch of voters on our list that are not part of the 550,000 figure that I gave you that we have conducted what we call our list maintenance mailings to, and they're no longer at that address. So we have them on our list. They're just tagged with a question, and if they should happen to show up on election day, we'll require them to re-register before allowing them to vote. But there is that population on our list as well, yeah. Of course, you know, we get notifications from the Department of Health that tells us people have died, so we tag them on our list that they're deceased and things like that. Felons, right, when the court sentences them, we'll have to, you know, make those notations in our list as well. So those things are on our list as well.
I think as part of the registration process, I'd like to also bring up the fact that one of the ways that we maintain our list is we try to bump our files against other files that are available to us, like the state ID files. We're going to check with the judiciary soon to see if they will allow us to bump our file against their jury file, and this is to sort of confirm for us certain bits of information that we might have. For example, like I think the jury's selection file has a indicator on there that for U.S. citizenship, and the ID, the state ID file also has a listing for citizenship, and we can bump our file against that file to see whether or not we might have non-citizens who are on our list. We're not certain if the judiciary will allow us to do that. We've checked with also with the state taxation office of Department of Taxation, and they've said that we are not able to bump our file for legal reasons. We presently bumped the file against the driver license file and the building file to check on whether or not our registrants are at the proper place. So this is just kind of to let you know that we do try to check our files against other files in order to make sure that we have as up-to-date information on our voter file as is possible. We're unable to really bump against the Immigration Naturalization Service files because of we don't share the same identifiers. Yeah, we don't share common identifiers. And in addition to that, they have a number of lists, and in order for us to do a complete check of those, we'd have to bump up against all of those lists. They have a list on the West Coast, the Northwest, the Southwest, the South, the Middle States, Northwest, Northeast, and we just don't have the type of resources that we need to do that. We did a check against the U.S. Postal Service address of
National Change of Address
file, and our success rate on that was rather low.
We did a sampling. It was at about, we found about maybe 10% or so that of a sample that we did that where they could identify that an address had changed, which is rather low. That's why we tend to take the approach of actually using the U.S. mail and confirmation procedure to maintain our file. It's a little bit more expensive, but we think it works pretty well.
Okay, so in addition to trying to update our files by bumping up against other files, there is an established challenge process that has been there for many, many years. And in this process, any registered voter is able to come in and challenge a voter prior to election day and challenge that person's right to vote, okay, based on the person not being the person or that person not being registered properly in that district or precinct. You can do that prior to the election, and you can do that on election day in the precincts.
Has anyone ever done that?
Yeah, so we've had a couple of cases during an election and prior to an election. Mostly, they've turned out to be not really bona fide challenges. The person will come in and make allegations. We hold hearings, and during the hearings, the person will either retract or we find out that in fact the challenged person actually lives there. There is an appeal process in this. You can appeal to the Board of Registration, and the board's decisions are also appealable to the Supreme Court. So it's not a simple process, but the process is established and it is there. And this is the process that we ask any voter within the state to follow, because whenever a challenge of this kind is made, we will follow up. Our problem in the past 2 years has been, people will take the list to the INS and say these people are not registered, are aliens, and therefore they should, they extrapolate from that and say 15% of all our voters are in fact aliens. And when in fact the INS has run a check, they find three or four people that were aliens that were registered, and of those four people, maybe three did not vote, one probably did, and we're running into those kinds of stories that come out, where had they done it properly, they could have brought us the names of those three or four people and said these people should be challenged as voters because they're not qualified to be voters, and we would have followed up. In another situation, the INS is now able in their interview process to ask aliens whether or not they registered or voted. And that made the news of about a year ago, where they had found about three people who said that they had registered to vote. We found that of those three people, two had registered but had not voted, and one person had voted in a number of elections. We also found out that that person had registered in front of a deputy registrar a few years ago. The allegation was made that our convenient and accessible manner of registration was causing us to have a lot of aliens on our list, and we don't think that the facts support that allegation.
Mr. Yoshino, do you mind if I ask Mr. Mullen a question? Because we need to take a picture of him talking, so I'll just jump and ask him a question, if that's okay.
Well, you can ask him.
Mr. Mullen, do you usually hire PR firms in the jurisdictions in which you're in charge of the elections?
That's an issue that can come up once in a while. Generally, it doesn't, and the reason is because generally the vendor is not involved in the press as much as we are here. And we just want to make sure that our side of the story is told, instead of just having people, instead of just having allegations thrown at us. We want to respond, and we felt the best way to do that was to hire some local representatives to help us do that.
Do you feel any more pressure in this upcoming election with all the problems that you faced last time and also in other areas besides Hawaii?
The only place that I care about is Hawaii. And the reason I'm here is to make sure that it goes right. And do I feel any more pressure? No, because I know that it's going to go right with the help of the election office and the different county clerks and the volunteers and the poll workers that all help run a good election.
What's going to be different this time?
What's going to be different? The biggest difference is that the poll workers and the voters and ESNS have all gotten a chance to do this. You know, we got our year of experience under our belt. Doing business in Hawaii is a lot different than it is on the mainland. There were some barriers that we realistically didn't quite understand when we first came over. We're well aware of those now. But also, a big part of this is the voters' acceptance of the system, the voters' ease of use of the system, and the poll workers' comfort level with the system. You don't want the system to be you want the system to be in the background, and the poll workers concentrate on what they need to concentrate on, and that is getting people through those polls, making sure that the proper people are voting in their precincts, and administering to that precinct properly. You don't want them to be worrying about any equipment.
So what are some of these barriers that you are referring to about Hawaii that makes it different from other?
There's a geography difference, that the fact that there are remote islands here that you generally don't deal with in other states. The time difference from the mainland. Here it is 2:00 in the afternoon, all of our people are at home. So if one of you wants to talk, you wants to interview one of our corporate people, I've got to call them at home. Those are just some of the little tiny differences that make this different. One of the big differences is the amount of activity that the observers bring to the election process, and the fact that this is has to be that the observers help out and take such an active role in the election process. It's different than it is on the mainland. Observers don't take that kind of a role.
And are you living here, or are you? Do you
We're living
you?
Here.
How many of you are living here?
There are two of us right now.
Oh, so you moved here.
We've moved here, periodically we go back home because we're both married, and periodically they come here. So we're here until December.
Okay. Can we go on?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have this challenge process that is in place, is established, and that we're asking people to follow that process rather than taking this to the INS and then nailing us in the press, yeah? Or making allegations that our lists are not clean because we have extrapolating from that list, we have 15,000 people that are not registered, that are aliens who are not supposed to be registered. I have not seen that list, by the way. I'm talking about a list that went to the INS in I think 1994 or so. This is an old story, but it keeps coming back up, so I have to speak to it. But I am told that most of the people that are listed on that list were had Spanish surnames, so we believe that perhaps they were people just went down the voting list and listed all of the people who they thought were illegal aliens or something like that. That's called profiling, that's called targeting, that's against the law by the National Voter Registration Act provisions and by voting rights provisions. So we hope that doesn't happen. We have gone through and talked to the INS, and we have found that although 15,000 names were provided, that you know, we only found three or four in that first instance that actually were.
You went over the. You checked the 15,000.
Well, as the INS did.
They did
over a four-year period, and they reported that out. That never got covered by the press. And more recently, because of the new law which allows the INS to ask whether or not you voted, there was another three or four that they had to investigate. And in that case, as I said, three of the four had registered but had not voted, and the fourth person, I think, voted, but in that case had registered in front of a deputy registrar. So
what's the
allegation? Excuse me?
You said that twice now. I don't understand the significance of it being a deputy registrar.
Well, the allegation was that our new system is too open and accessible. But in the case where the person voted for over 10 years or so, that person actually registered in front of a registrar.
You can register by mail, is that?
Well, now you can register by mail. Okay. So, if the allegation is that it's too open, it appears that the person who did actually register before did it in front of someone and swore in front of that person. So we don't think that the system being more accessible and convenient now has led to any more misregistrations. It appears that the registrations that are there are probably an error and a mistake rather than someone trying to commit fraud. We try to make known that it is a Class C felony to give us false information on the affidavit. We believe that most people understand that. As it relates to absentee voting, we have a process in place that is application-based, so a voter who wants to vote absentee needs to send in an application. That application is processed, the ballot is sent to the voter, or the voter is able to vote at an absentee voting site that is opened at least 10 days prior to the election. Again, there's a processing there of all applications. We check the applications by signature, and if the ballot or if the application meets the low standards, then the person is sent a ballot. The ballot is voted and sent back, and it is received by the clerk. It goes through another process for receipt if it's a mail ballot, and we then go down to the counting center and process that ballot. There is a reconciliation process that goes along with the absentee voting system or process, and in the last few elections, the reconciliation of ballots against applications were very, very good. I think neighbor islands have come in at zero or one, which means that they are maybe one ballot off, or zero, which means that they have accounted for all the ballots that came back to them. In addition to that, you know, if we have allowed anyone who is interested to observe the absentee process should they wish to. And during the past few elections in Honolulu, we had a few people come in, but they didn't stay throughout the whole process, right? They come in for a couple of days and they watch, and then they don't come back. We're trying to explain the system, because there have been allegations made in again the editorial pages that says that our absentee process is flawed and is fraught with fraud. We don't believe so. As you know, we have a single party primary in the state. This means that a voter is allowed to receive a ballot for each party in the primary and vote for candidates in one party only and not cross parties. If they cross parties, they'll invalidate their ballot. We need to get that word out to the readers. So we're asking for your help to get that out. The new system prints all of the ballots on a single ballot card. It provides the voter the opportunity to cross party more easily. However, the system that we have contracted to put in place also has provisions to stop the ballot if a cross party situation arises and the voter is able to get the ballot back in. By going through a spoiled ballot process, correct that ballot and both voted properly.
You mean this can be done right on the spot?
Yeah, that's what happened.
You put your ballot in and it's that's rejected, right. And then they give it back to you, you can correct it?
That's right. In the old data vote system, once you drop that ballot in, that was gone. So the voter has the added chance of correcting their ballot. Now, there is a spoil ballot process that is in place, and every voter can spoil as many ballots as they want. But after about two or three, the precinct officials will probably go in and try to help them vote, you know, and walk them through their process.
So you shouldn't have any spoil ballots.
I don't know.
We still do.
Okay. Some people never get the message. Okay.
If you make a mistake on your ballot, that you come and ask for another one, that would be a spoiled ballot also.
Okay. But the voters will still get a chance to vote.
Oh yes. Yeah. So it's one of the benefits of the system. We think the old system didn't allow you to do that. You know, the voter may have thought they made a mistake, and once they drop their ballot in, it's gone. Okay, this system allows you to stop, and it asks the voter, do you want this ballot back to correct this, or do you want to just vote it as is? And the voter makes the decision whether what they want to do. We have some special elections coming up this year. My understanding is that the city council has a couple of special
elections. We're expecting two vacancies on the council, as well know. We're expecting the resignations to occur really late, probably on the very last day of filing, which is July 25th, which means we will set up a calendar or a time, another filing, nomination paper filing period, specifically for those two races, those two council races. It'll occur at the primary election, first special election. It will be decided then, because the winner takes all. It's not
in this particular situation, it's the winner-take-all plurality votes will carry the race. So it should be decided, will be decided at the primary election. Unlike our other two races for mayor and prosecutor, it's possible that it would be decided then if a candidate got 50% plus one vote. If no one does, and they have to move forward to the second special election, which is the general election. And of course, if you have, so far we have just one candidate for prosecutor. So if that, and his name will go on, he's the only one, and that's settled.
Okay, so at the state level, there appears to be a couple of contests which might be special election situations where, for example, there's one Board of Education on Maui.
Possibly, right.
And there might be some other races coming up in the Nililani area on this island.
Oh, yeah, if I could, Dwayne. For the county of Maui, we're going to have our first special nonpartisan election for the council. And that was based on the 1998 Charter Amendment. So it's going to be the first time we had nonpartisan elections for the county council. But the provision is different than, say, on Oahu, because in the first special election that's held in conjunction with the primary, it's only the two top vote getters that will advance to the second special, regardless of the amount of votes that that gets. So the 50% plus one wouldn't apply in this case.
If there are more than two candidates, you have a second round.
And the second special election will be two highest.
I mean, if there's only two candidates to begin with, you don't need a second.
Oh, okay. If there's two or three yeah. candidates, the names will appear in the general election, the second special election ballot only.
Is there any change in the technology between this upcoming election season and the last one? There were some problems with machines, scanners that were not working or jamming or something like that.
No technology changes. There have been some minor changes in the feeding of the ballots, but there's a new shroud that's on these units because they're newer than they were. They have newer units, so they look a little different. But basically, no. There have been a couple changes. There's some new software we're using that enables us to lay out the ballot at the front end, give camera-ready copy to our printer at that point, and then we use it for the programming or coding end of things. And it also is used for our output devices for election night reporting.
Well, how can you be confident that you don't have the same problems? Do you know what happened last time?
The problems last time were a lens occlusion problem, and that's been well documented. There's a lens occlusion on five units, and that problem has been taken care of. That's a software issue, not a hardware issue.
Lens occlusion?
Yep.
What would that be in layman's terms?
It would be that some foreign substance had gotten on our read lens.
When we did our...
Was it just dirty?
No, it wasn't dirty. It was gum. I'm not sure exactly what the substance was. It was a gummy-type substance that went from the ballot to the read head and stayed on the read head and gave us a false read. And that has since been changed, and we demonstrated that in the demonstration package that was a big topic. That was one of the big things for the procurement office as well as the Office of Elections. How do we know that this won't happen again? You have to assure us of that to demonstrate that ability.
I know that in 98 when we did our, or 99 when we did our review of the ballots, I think in at least one precinct that we looked at where the lens occlusion problem did arise, we saw lipstick on a couple of the ballots, and we think maybe that may have been the reason why, you know.
Lipstick?
Somebody marked the ballot with lipstick. Okay. So that one I saw, and I kind of concluded that maybe that was one of the reasons why we had that problem in that particular precinct.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a one.
Just that's an anecdote that I'm sharing with you, because I actually looked at those ballots, you know, and then it was kind of marked rather heavily down the column. So maybe.
I noticed there were, as I remember anyway, in some races there were huge numbers of spoiled ballots.
Multi-party ballots in the primary. Yeah.
In the primary.
That's why I brought up this.
This time it's not going to happen because the ballot will be rejected.
Nope. In 1998, we had the same feature turned on, and people evidently did not take the option to spoil their ballot and do it again. Okay. So that's why I brought up this thing about the single-party primary. We need to get the word out that, you know, voters are able to vote for one party, for candidates in one party and only one party.
Well, can't the attendants there call it to the attention of the voter and say, you can't do this?
We have tried to do that, and we got criticized because people were telling those attendants that, you know, it's not your business to tell us how to vote. We get criticized for that. We get criticized for not doing our job. We get criticized for everything. We have a ballot box official who stands there, and when that thing goes off, they say, okay, this means that you have, and they'll read the message on the LCD. They will explain it to the voter, and voters will still press the button and accept that ballot. Okay, so, you know.
You know, we've heard some feedback, and some of the voters do that because they're too embarrassed to correct their ballot.
Okay, so we are trying to get the word out to say, look, we've always had a spoiled ballot process, and it's no big thing if you spoil your ballot to ask for a new one. You know, you can correct the ballot, so no big deal.
How many recounts were there in 98?
One.
Just one? And was that driven by...
Well, 99, actually. 99. In 98, we did some manual counts just to... When we found the problems in the seven precincts that we found, mm-hmm. we did manual counts, and we had reported out that our counts showed that the outcomes of those races or contests did not change. Evidently, what we said didn't matter. It became a political issue.
Yeah. How many votes were actually changed?
Maybe one or two. I don't know specifically, but you know, I can go and look up there.
I think one of the important things is that in the post-election audit, it was brought to the attention of the Office of Elections that there could have, you know, there something didn't look right in the report. So what they do is they go back and they investigate and they look at, you know, they've got the recountable documents there, and that's an important part of this system and this process, and they find out. And through this process, they found out, well, there could have been a problem, and indeed there was, with five of the precinct readers. And what that led to was the doubt that could it have gone more? How do we know? And as a vendor, we came back and said, if you want to, we will come back and do a full recount of the entire election, which we did. I think that's the important part with any vendor that you take a look at, whether it's with your election equipment or anything else, that if something irregular does happen with the equipment I bought, what's going to happen? When I go back and talk to them, does the vendor stand up? Do they come back? Do they own up to what's going on? And do they participate freely in what's going on? One of the things that's important here is that the vendor does have to come back. The vendor does have, there are some specific technical questions that only the vendor could ask, could answer. Duane and his staff and the county clerks can answer to specific questions the detail of their county involvement, but when it comes to some detailed technical questions, the vendor's got to be there, and that's what the state bought when they bought ESNS, was a vendor that will come back. If there's ever a question, we will come back, sit down and explain it, talk about it, and recreate the entire election like we did. And I think we were proved out to be extremely accurate. There were those races that out of roughly 30,000 votes, nine votes separated the winner and the loser. That's an extremely close race. When the hand audit and the recounts took place, it turned out to be a total difference of 8 instead of 9.
You handled the recounts?
Yes.
And they weren't done at taxpayer expense?
No, they were done, but they were not done at taxpayer expense. They were done at our expense.
And by the way, just as another part of that story, ESNS offered to do that count before the legislature asked for them to do the count. Okay, I mean, they did not hesitate to come forth at the point where they began to understand that perhaps this problem was becoming a major problem for them. They said, we are willing to come back and do a count. And I think it was based on that the Senate Judiciary said, we want you to do that count.
While we're on this subject, could you just review what happened about this latest contract? There's been criticism that you selected the same vendor in view of the experience in the last election. And apparently there were 3 bidders and 2 of them were disqualified. Is that right? Could you explain all that?
Sure. We went through a process of developing requirements and specs. Those requirements and specs were not just developed over the past 3 or 4 years. As a matter of fact, they were developed beginning in 91 when we went out for a large RFP for another system in 1991. And at that time, we were interested in direct recording electronic machines. These are the touchscreen types. And we went through about a 2-year process there. We came out at the back end and we recommended to the then chief election officer that although the machines were very, very good, that they were not part of a system, and by that I mean, for example, that there was no absentee system connected with this main system, the machine. And based on that, we recommended that we not buy the system. And I think that was a good decision because I think New York City bought a bunch of these machines, the electronic voting machines, and I'm not certain that they have yet run an election on them. They may have run some borough elections, but they haven't done a state election or a countywide election using the machines. But that's the beginning of the requirements that were promulgated. And since that time, those requirements were basically established by the Federal Election Commission, which sets some minimal standards for all systems across the United States. So we took that as a basis. We added to that requirements that we saw in Florida, San Francisco, and Alaska that we thought were pretty, reasonable. And then we adopted the original specs to reflect our intent or our need to get a mark sense system rather than a touchscreen system. The mark sense is the bubble system that we used in 98. So there are certain words that we have to change in order to expand that requirement or revise the requirements to include the mark sense rather than just limited to the DREs or the direct recording electronic. At that point we set it, we put it out for bid. We sent it to 8 companies.
When was this? This year?
Yes. earlier, actually in November, I guess, of 99, we sent it out. And three companies responded. And I think this is one of the misconceptions there is that we got the bids back and we looked at them, and that's not true. What happens is the bids come back to the state procurement office, and they do an initial review of the proposals. At that review, the state procurement office said that two of the company's submissions were deficient, and therefore we, the Office of Elections, could not look at them. And I wasn't too happy about that because, you know, I wanted some competition in the marketplace. We were told that at that point to look at the one proposal that had met all the requirements of the State Procurement Office, and to tell them whether or not we thought the proposal was a reasonable one and whether it was a fair one. And so we reviewed it, and we thought the price was too high. So we told the company, BS&S, that we did not feel that the price was a fair and reasonable one. And at that point, we were told by the State Procurement Office that we could do one of two things. One was that we could go out again for an RFP. And the second is that we could negotiate with BS&S to get to what we consider to be a fair and reasonable offer.
Wait, and when you say we mean like an evaluation committee.
Yeah, we had an evaluation committee that came together and helped us make these decisions. So we basically went out and we unanimously decided that we did not have enough time to do an RFP again. And so we sat down and we wrote to ES&S, which is allowed by procurement laws, to participate in an alternative procurement process. Basically, it's to negotiate with the company to come out with a agreement that both sides agreed on. And we went through that process. Okay, there's another part here that I failed to mention, but prior to the submission of the bids, there is a pre-proposal conference where anyone who is interested in bidding on the RFP is able to come to Hawaii and to ask questions and to clarify any of the requirements and specs that are there. And at that meeting, ES&S showed up and Global showed up. Global, International, in any case, the other company that has a MarkSense system. And that is sort of a wide open kind of meeting. People can come in and ask us, you have a requirement on page 21, 1A, you know, we're not too clear on that. What do you mean by that? And as part of that process, all of that goes on. Okay. In addition to that, the proposal is worded such that it says, if you are unable to meet any of these requirements, you are able to propose an alternate solution to the problem. Okay, so if we're asking you to count ballots in 10 minutes. Okay? This is an example. We're asking you to count 70,000 ballots in 10 minutes, and you are unable to do that. You are able to propose to the state an alternate means of doing that, alternate to the way we want to do it. Okay? That's all part of the proposal, and that's all part of whatever is submitted to us. Now, it came down to the point where at this pre-proposal conference, ESNS came in and Global came in. There were some questions that were asked and clarifications that were asked for, and all of those were provided. And then the proposals came in. And then the State Procurement Office said, of these three proposals that came in, from Unilect, from Global, and from ESNS, Global was deficient and Unilect was deficient. Now, I can tell you what the SBO told me about the deficiency, but you know, if you want the specifics on that, I would ask that you go to the State Procurement Office and ask them, because they know why they disqualified those two guys.
Did you expect more bids?
Actually, I expected at least three bids, because to my knowledge, there are three companies that sell this system, or the MarkSense system. It's Global, it's ESNS, and there's another company, Sequoia Pacific, our old vendor. And you know, I don't know why Sequoia Pacific did not bid. My understanding is that they have the hardware from the Business Records Corporation that they bought part of, and that is really, we used that system in 1988, I think, as part of another pilot project that we ran in 1988. And it ran okay, but you know, sort of old technology. And we're not too certain. Beginning in about 1986, I will digress here a bit. We had talked to Sequoia Pacific about migrating from the card system we had, which is the punch cards, because that technology is based in it's 1960s technology. Okay. And we were frankly getting killed with our ballot costs. In the year, in 1998, the ballot bid would have been $1.8 million for just ballots. And so from about 1988, we had been asking Sequoia whether or not they had alternate ways of running an election, because we had worked with them for 26 years and we're fairly comfortable and confident with what they had provided us during that time. They had told us beginning in about 1986 that they were taking our data vote system and they were converting it to a MarkSense system. And so every year after that, I asked them whether or not they had finished the conversion. And they always told me, yeah, we're almost there, but they never got there. In 96 or so, when did they purchase BRC? 97, they purchased part of the Business Records Corporation. And under that agreement, there was some stipulation that they could not sell any hardware for a year or so. And, you know, I'm not real clear on this, but it's my understanding there was some stipulation.
Well, it's kind of you're in a kind of an embarrassing position, winding up with only one bidder.
Well, you can say it's embarrassing, and I am a little bit frustrated because we went through all this work to get as many bidders as we could, and it would be embarrassing if I was the person that made the decision to disqualify. I'm not. That came down from the State Procurement Office. When they told me that was the reality, I went to Lloyd Unibasami and I said, what are you talking about? You mean I can't even look at the proposals? He said, yeah, you're right. You can't look at the proposals. I was very, very unhappy. But the state procurement laws say that that's what I got to do. And so that's what I did. And, you know, my critics want to say that. Be my guest. You know, I follow the laws.
Well, you have no choice.
I have no choice. If I had my choice, I would have sat down with these guys, pardon me, and Global, and I would say, okay, what's the price here? What can you give me for this price? I would have loved to do that. That was not a choice open to me. Okay?
And the reality is that there, the election industry is a small industry. There aren't, you know, 100 different companies that can come and bid on this. And given that, there aren't very many companies that can even have the resources to come over here and put the personnel in place to be able to do this right. That's a big part of this job.
Here's another thing. Had Sequoia done what it said it would have done, I believe the state would have migrated to their system. Okay? Because we had worked with Sequoia for 26 years. They know our elections. They know how we print our ballots. Now, you talk about criticisms about stringent requirements. When I came in 1984, or 81, we were criticized because the ballot requirements that we had in place at that point only allowed for Sequoia Pacific to bid. And frankly, it was through our efforts that we opened that up. So much so that Business Records Corporation came in 1986 and again in 88, and they got the bid in 86. Okay? And this is after 20 some odd years of Sequoia Pacific. So, you know, I feel kind of frustrated that I get criticized for writing bids so that I'm keeping people out. When from back in 88, we have been trying to expand this market so that, you know, we have more bidders. Okay, we changed some of those. I give an example. The bid specs in 1986 said that the company that prints the ballots for the state of Hawaii had to have jet presses. They specified jet presses. Okay? We went in and we said jet presses or similar, right? You know, jet presses or something that could give us what we wanted. And we opened it up. That's what we did. Okay? Our election laws indicate that the voting position shall be to the right of the name. Do you know why? The reason why is because that's the only place that the Sequoia Pacific system has to count the ballot. So if you want to talk about requirements that limit competition, I think you got to go back to those requirements and look how we've changed those to open up that system. And we have done that. I'm not going to hide in the shadows about that, because we worked hard to get those things changed. Just this past year, we changed it to have it on both sides. So if we go back to the Sequoia Pacific system, we can put it there, or we go to this system, we can put it on this side. We've expanded the options that are available to us. And we've worked hard to do that. Okay? So, you know, people who are criticizing us should look at the history of what we've been through. We haven't tried to constrain competition, we've tried to open it up. We got criticized in the 80s for sending our ballots to the mainland to get printed. Well, in 1998, we forced the company to print in-state. That's a requirement of our contract. We kept about $500,000 in-state. There is a printer down here in Honolulu that prints the ballots. Okay? Prior to that, every election period, $800,000, $900,000, $1 million, $1,006,000 were going to California. 1998, first time in 26 years we printed them in-state. As part of our contract today, they will print in state. Okay? So we're trying to keep jobs in the state. Getting back to the contract and there has been a comment made that the specifications are onerous and unreasonable. Well, the person who made that comment also came to the conference that I just mentioned, and he was able to ask questions about those requirements, and had he come in with a bona fide submission, we would have sat down with him as the state procurement laws allow, as we would have with ESNS, and said to them, okay, now you are a bona fide submitter. Tell us, what are you going to give us for the price we're quoting? And they would have been able to sit down and say to us, this is unreasonable, this is unreasonable, this is unreasonable, and we would have negotiated those items. Okay? Now, for whatever reason, they did not do that. They did not submit a bid that met the requirements of the state, therefore they were disqualified. They didn't even get to that point, much to my frustration and disappointment. Okay? Now, so we're at the point now, I have a single bidder. Was I embarrassed? Not really. Was I frustrated? Yes. Was I disappointed? Yes. The law says at that point I can do one of two things. I chose to negotiate. And let me tell you, it wasn't a very enjoyable negotiation that I went through. Okay. I think Todd Mullen, being on the other side, he can tell you the same thing.
Wasn't fun for anybody.
I mean, we got down and dirty a couple of times there. Okay. What we came out with was that and by the way, here's another part of this. There's a comment that's been made that the original RFP was called for the first year and then two additional cycles after that as the contract period. And as part of the negotiations, what we were told was that in order for ESNS to amortize the cost and make it a reasonable cost for the state, they would have to have an additional year or an additional cycle. Mm-hmm. Because they have their sunk costs and they got to make it back. And if within a 6-year period, our cost would have been very, very high. So we sat down and thought about that and said, well, given the situation we're in, can we give a little on this? We talked to Mr. Unibasami. He noted that we could. That was a negotiable item. And so during that period of negotiation, we said, okay, we will go with that four cycle process. Now, there are some benefits for us to have a longer contract. One of the benefits is, Todd mentioned this, it gives us, as administrators, more opportunities to familiarize ourselves with the system. Contrary to popular belief, you cannot just bring a system in and run it and expect to be running like the Sequoia Pacific system, which we ran for 26 years. Impossible. Okay? And I have said this publicly, that if it becomes state policy that the state decides that every single election cycle we will have a new system in here, I'm not here. Okay? Because I would be happy to help whoever is in here to try to do that, but I'm not going to be the guy sitting there saying, we are going to do this. Because I think that person will have an impossible task. Okay? It takes time for you to learn a system. It takes time for you to become acquainted and familiar enough with the system that you can operate it almost flawlessly. It also takes that amount of time for your volunteers, the precinct officials, our people that come down to the calling centers to learn that system.
So you have a four-year contract?
I have a four-cycle contract. This year plus 6 years after this.
Just running the elections in 2000, 2002, 2004, and 2006.
Okay. So some of the benefits that accrue to the state is that we are more familiar with the system. So we went through this negotiation process and we came out at the back end with the contract that we had. And that's basically the story. Now, if you have any other questions on that.
What's the election going to cost this year?
2.3, I think. It is substantially higher than what we had in 1998. But it's...
What was 98?
1.6. But it's substantially lower than what the original price was that was quoted to us, which was, I think, 3.8. Okay.
And it's substantially lower than you've ever paid in the past. But one of the things to think about here is with this next primary, if we've got, I believe, 10 parties,
eight
parties, that would have essentially doubled your printing cost with your old system.
And
that's a card-free.
You're talking about the system in place before 98.
Yeah, before 98.
Not to throw support here. Our ballot cost in 98 would have been 1.8, and that's just the ballot cost now.
Yeah.
We're not talking about all these services.
2.3 for the upcoming election.
Yeah.
You said the last one was 1.6?
Yeah.
Sure.
And the original bid that came in to us was about 3.8.
Why is the disparity? What is the reason? Why is,
we got to talk to them.
That much more?
Yeah.
Is that just your bid? Or,
that was our bid.
So the last election, you bid on the low side to get the business?
No, we didn't bid on the low side to get the business. We bid it to what we thought we could do it for.
Couldn't do it. So based on your experience, you could do it. Yes. So
that's for one cycle?
One cycle.
So that'll be the primary.
And then the next three cycles is fixed at 2.5.
2.5? 2.5. And what kind of cost do you have for that?
Or
one of the other, besides that contract, you've got a lot of other costs.
Well,
I've
got warm body costs that we have.
Yeah. So what's your budget for
it? It'll probably be, if we remain static as we are now, around $4 million total per year. Per election cycle.
But this system is labor saving, is that right? I mean,
Fewer
workers for this?
In the counting center, we save a lot of labor. It's less labor intensive at the counting center. We decreased that staff by about 2/3 over previous years. But you know, we have their staff in there now, right? So, six of one, half a dozen of the other, I guess. It's a choice one makes.
So, the old system?
We had a lot of assistance and support from the state ICSD people. They had their budgets cut over the past 6 or 8 years, and that's impacted us. That impacted, that kind of forced us to look at new systems, yeah. because they no longer can support us. We used to get maybe about 60 of their people to help us during the election cycle. And of that 60, 12 of them, about 12 people worked with us for a 4-month period prior to the election.
How many ESLS people will be here for the election?
I don't know.
We'll probably have support staff about 25.
Any more questions?
Questions about the contracts? No? Okay. We are still looking for precinct officials or election day officials to help us provide services to voters. We have open recruitment right now. We'll take anybody who wants to work. You know, they got to be certified, so they have to go through training. They have to be registered voters. There's been a lot of, I guess, a story spread around that the system is set up to help the party of the governor, and you know that's the law. I mean, it says that the chairperson of a precinct must be the party of the governor. At least 50 plus one of the precinct officials must be the same party of the governor. But the reality is, the practical reality is, that it's not true. In 1998, the Republican Party provided us about 80% of their requirement, about, I think, 700 and some odd people statewide. The Democrats provided us less than that. Okay. So the reality is the precincts are staffed by a multi-partisan group of people. Independents, nonpartisans, Greens, Democrats, and Republicans. And we have chairs, by necessity, who are not Democrats, because we can't fill them with Democrats. Okay? So while the laws say one thing, the law also says that after a certain date, I have authority to go out and open recruit anybody that I can. And the reality is, that is what happens. Okay, so, and this is a group that makes certain that what happens in the precinct is really run, operated fairly and with integrity. Because when you have people not of the same party in the same precinct, there's no way that hanky panky is going to happen. The same is in our counting center. We have official observers there who come to us from various groups within the community. These might be the parties, it might be the Hawaii Bar Association, it might be the Office of Foreign Affairs, it might be the International Association of Computer Auditors, it could be the Data Processing Managers Association. HNA has a couple people that come in and help us. So we have official observers who watch us in the counting center who represent a broad spectrum of people. And they're the guys that drove his predecessor crazy.
Jerry's out on me. So.
1998 in the primary election, I had his predecessor come to me during the course of the election and tell me he was going to resign because our observers were asking him to do things that he believed were unreasonable. Okay, and I had to go out and get him to do that. So if people are saying that you know, irregularities are happening in the counting center, I don't think so. Okay, because the observers are there and they tell you what they want done.
What's your level of confidence that things are going to go really smoothly this year?
Wow.
50-50, 60-40, 10-90.
90-10. 90.